My name is Birgitte Jallow, based in Denmark. I work out of my own company called Communication Partners. Most of my work is in developing countries, and I always ensure to work together with local partners, women and men, consultants, activists who are involved and knowledgeable about the area work that I'm doing.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Birgitte Jallow, spelled J-A-L-L-O-V, is one of the world's most renowned experts in communication for development and empowerment. She has been a consultant on more than 200 projects in 50 countries since the 1980s. Much of her work revolves around community radio, and especially women and community radio. Here's how she got her start.
I have a strategically oriented communications degree, which led me to want to know more about journalism. So I worked 5 years as a journalist. I got involved with community radio in 1980, when the Danish Ministry of Culture started the process of developing a legal framework for a new experimental period of community radio. We had only had the state monopoly up until then in Denmark. And I and some friends got involved as a follow-up group to this legal committee. And we worked on creating the first community radios. I was part of starting the first community radio in Denmark, was part of the women's collective there, all the women's organizations in the early 80s. And we went on for 5 years, and at the same time I was part of starting the first community TV stations, where we also did a lot of community organizing work and using radio and TV in different ways. And I was going to write my thesis at that time, and what was more obvious than doing it about women's access and women's use of community radio? And we used all of these theories about women's productivity and women's aesthetics, and how it was important to create space for women in public arenas like theater and, of course, the job area, but in the cultural sense also in the media and community radio. And the title of the thesis that I did with two friends was A Counter Image in Sound, Using Radio for Women's Liberation.
During the United Nations Decade for Women, 1975 to 1985, women from developed and developing countries got unprecedented opportunities to meet each other. Many started projects that bridged their worlds. Birgitte Jallow became involved with the International Women's Development Movement.
I work with a Danish NGO called Kulu Women in Development, where we prepared for the Nairobi Conference in 85 and for Beijing when time came for that, and did a lot of advocacy and lobbying in Denmark around these issues, not least around women in media. At the same time, I moved more and more into using communication for development, and headed a small department in ILO in Geneva in the early 90s.
ILO being?
International Labour Organization. So we were working with work and with training, and many of the projects that I was working with was dealing with women's lives in different countries and realities, women living with disabilities or getting women into technical trades. And did a video at the time when it was still new to say, educate a woman and you educate a nation, educate a man and you educate an individual. So that was the title of one of my small videos. I have then worked on different other things, among other 6 years in Mozambique, where I was manager of a big media development project, working to assist the transformation of media from a socialist reality in Mozambique to multi-party democracy, where we worked with the national broadcaster, created a lot of community radios. When we started, there were 4. 6 years later, there were 50. And we worked with small newspapers and with women, identifying what are the obstacles to get more women in media, and worked to try to counter some of those. So those were 6 exciting years in Southern Africa. And since then, since 2004, I have then been working on my own. out of my little company.
So I want to go back to Mozambique in a little while, but first I wanted to ask you about a study you mentioned that was looking at the effects of community radio on the society.
One of my preoccupations, concerns, and irritations in my very practical life has always been that you take all these initiatives, you support all these projects, you may even start radios, you work a lot on programming, but very little attention has been paid to what kind of impact does that actually have in reality. And I was part of this wave some 5-10 years ago, beginning to identify how do you do impact assessments, how do you measure the impact of a community radio concretely in a given reality. And I've been developing with colleagues and as part of evaluations for different organizations, different tools to go out and say, well, it's good if the community radio is participatory and transparent and with a lot of community involvement. That's wonderful and important. It's necessary that you do programs that are adequate and needed and provide the information and the platforms and the voice and the debate that you need. But what does all of that do? There's a reason why we do all of that, and that is to improve living conditions. It's to social change, with some brief words. And it has been striking that when I've been carrying out these impact assessments, the first thing that comes out in women's groups and even often in men's groups when you talk with them is since the radio came, women's conditions have been improved. Women are being beaten up a lot less. In one reality, in an African country, women were regularly not allowed to leave the house. So after the radio came and it has been debated on the radio and men felt kind of embarrassed keeping their women away and so on, the doors became easier to open. And a lot of fantastic changes. So I must say that even when I have not entered into one of these impact assessment situations with a view to see how has this impacted on women's lives, it is the impact on women's lives that stands out most strikingly in people's description of what has this new communication tool that is small and neat and accessible and ours done.
Wow. So what kind of tool have you used or tools have you used to actually assess this change?
I've been using a number of different methodologies, some that had already been developed by others and described, and some that I have developed myself with teams of people I've been working with. One of them is called the Most Significant Change methodology. It's from 2005. It was when the guide was released. It's been worked on for many years by people, and the basic beauty of it is that you don't need a baseline and all of this heavy duty stuff which many community radios would not have. In any case, of course, so you can enter reality, and by the way you ask and by the way you work, you get people to reflect the changes that have happened since this radio came or this special program started or whatever it is you are assessing. And another beauty of it is that it's story-based, so there's nothing with indicators or other estranging elements, but you ask, what is the most significant change that has happened? And for an illiterate woman, or man, or child, or whatever, but especially now I'm thinking of an illiterate woman, she's used to telling stories, and this is how she would approach you, and this is how she would answer to these questions. Well, this was when the rains were here, and you know, and then it goes on. And it is the stories that carry the change, because the stories are the life, and it's in the life that the change takes place. So this is a very beautiful tool. It is anecdotal. Many people who are from the harder sciences question whether it shouldn't be more quantitative. I and many of the people who are working in this way would argue that if you do it sufficiently rigorously, and there's a whole methodology and a series of steps that you take in order to triangulate and reconfirm and revisit the findings of the methodology, and then the results are valid, and they're especially necessarily valid for the people who you have been assessing, because they are the ones who in the end say, well, we started out with these 200 important changes. And they are then distilled and discussed and prioritized down to maybe 50. And they are then the same kind of filtering process in a systematic way, become 15 or 10 most important changes. And then it's like when you elect a pope or identify a pope, you don't leave the room until you have agreed on which is number one most significant change, number two, and so on. And after that process has taken place, you have a documentation of the most, the felt, lived most important impact in the lives of me and the lives of my community. But you also have a community, and often it would be 6 or 7 villages that are reached by this community radio. They have been through an intense 1 month process of analyzing their own lives and analyzing what kind of changes is it I think are most important. So it is also an intensely educative and consciousness raising and whatever you can call process that means that the community is in a whole different place in their own lives, but also for the community programming afterwards. So that's a very beautiful tool, the most significant change. Then I have with groups developed tools that do not require such an intense process over such an extended period of time, but where you, every time you have a public event in a community, for example, you have volunteers that are trained to ask 5 or 10 questions depending on what the issues that the radio want to be informed about are, and simple ways of treating this data that is collected. And then if you do that on a regular basis, it's very, very simple, but it does give a very strong indication of how attitudes and approaches, thinking, interests, information level changes over time in a small community. And there's a lot more to that methodology, but just to demonstrate one of the very simple tools that we identified that if, again, sufficiently rigorously applied, actually does have a very strong story to tell.
Okay, so reduction in violence against women, the most significant change that was identified in, what, many places?
Yes. Actually, I've been carrying out these types of impact assessments in, not to exaggerate, I would say 10 different communities around community radios over the last 3 or 4 years. And every time is the first thing that is mentioned, we're being beaten up less. And I'm asking, but why? And are you sure this has to do with the radio? And one of the very strong stories I got was from a dry, poor, really pressured community in southwest Kenya, a radio run by 33 women's groups. And they said, well, the first way we did was that when the men are beating up their women, it's usually after they've been drinking. So they went to the bar in the evening with a tape recorder, and they talked with the men, and they were saying a lot of silly, foolish things, and then they put them on air the next day. And they became so embarrassed with themselves that actually also the problem with drinking, with having girlfriends, and all of these related issues became much less serious. And, well, women were beating up less, but it also meant softer lives for children who were both beaten up and abused in other ways in these situations. So in this community, it came out as number one. Finally, we are seen as real human beings. This was what was selected as the most significant change in this community. But also in other communities, using other research entry points or just group interviews or so, the first thing that comes out, we're beaten up less.
So you mentioned that this was a radio station that was run by women's groups. Are a lot of the stations run by women's groups?
In most of the countries I have worked, and I'm thinking of Africa, there's at least one women's group, women's radio. It's not a lot, but they exist and they have been formed for different reasons. One radio in Niger I visited, I was told that it's all women running it, and I came with all my good questions about feminism and how is this in a desert-like small village in Niger. And the woman looked at me and said, no, it's nothing like that. I said, well, then why are you only women? And she said, it's obvious because we had so many management problems and we had some funds and the funds always disappeared. And then we made different types of analysis and, you know, examination of audits, what was happening. And we sent away one by one all of the people who had violated our general code of behavior and taken from the money and used our common goods in ways in which we had not agreed. And when we had finished that process, there were no men left and they were all women. So that was one of the groups. and then there are other radios, like in Mozambique, where I lived, a very strong, very good radio, just in the outskirts of Maputo, that was created by the Women in Media organization, saying that, well, we preach there should be more women. We say that we want a different image of women in the station. We advocate and we struggle to have more women in leadership positions. Why shouldn't we make our own radio and show that we can do it all? And this has now been running for at least 10 years, and it was just yesterday I spoke with a colleague from Mozambique here in our conference, and she said that it's actually now one of the strongest radios and community radios in Mozambique.
I want to ask you about what were the second and third most important changes due to the community radio.
They were quite different from community to community. One community radio in Maasai land. I don't know if you say that in English. Mm-hmm. In the Maasai area in northern Tanzania. The first one was, again, that women were not beaten up. But the second one was that they had gotten their identity back. That with all the beautiful things that can be said and should be said about Tanzania being the most peaceful country in Africa and all Africans loving to go there because Tanzania is just different. Some of the price that has been paid is the price of being different. And one area in which this is seen is language. It has not been accepted to use your own local ethnic languages on the radio. So the Maasai had a radio station talking in Kiswahili and English, which very many of them didn't understand. So suddenly having a radio that talked in the Maasai language, and there are so many cultural things related to the language, we know that. Right now I'm speaking one that's not my own. And being able to talk about your own traditions and so on, that was one. Second most important change. The other one coming from a community radio in the southwest of Uganda, close to the conflict areas with the Lord's Resistance Army and all of that. They used the community radio very much to reinforce human rights and to report on human rights abuses and to make things so clear and touchable that, you know, the authorities and others that were violating people's rights stopped doing so. As blatantly, at least. So I was very curious myself as to whether actually you could, after having had a community radio on air 1 or 2 or 3 years, you would be able to document improvements in living standards. And there were examples like less of our cattle die because the radio could report where do you have water, for example, in the Maasai area. Or sharing of agricultural methodologies and so on. So there were lots of other more practical areas, but rights came out as the winners.
I'm talking with Brigitte Jallo. She's from Denmark, but she spent a long time in Mozambique working on community radio.
I moved to Mozambique in 1998 with my family to run a media development program that was initiated by the UN system and funded by a number of bilateral donors in order to assist Mozambique in its reform process of the media after moving from socialism to a multi-party democracy. In principle, the project was asked to assist in all the different media development areas, which was, of course, exciting to be allowed to and invited to work with. So we were working with the public radio and in transition from being state radio to more public service. We work with especially the small newspapers outside of the capital city. We worked with strengthening women journalists who were few and less well-trained and educated than men, and who had less opportunities to take part in international conferences and have exposure and opportunities and so on. We worked with very much on HIV and AIDS reporting, because it was declared a national pandemic and there was a special expectation that all paid attention to that, a certain percentage of our time. And and then we worked a lot with community radio. At the time that the program started, there were four community radios. It was quite was naturally not something that was encouraged during a socialist period to have all these plural voices. So after 6 years, the four community radios had developed into 60. As part of this process, we looked at the composition of the groups doing the community radio, and very often it was people with authority, and it was young men and some young women. So since we also looked at who are the community and what is the community made up by, we went through a kind of communitarization strengthening process where the communities were mapping who are we and so on, and that was used as an entry point to also discuss whether a community radio shouldn't in a more proper way reflect the composition of the community. And that was one point into getting much more engagement by women. And we created different processes around the women's work, and had a wonderful festival for women from the community radios after a year and a half, where we invited two women from each of the, at that time, 50 radios, and the men were very upset because you couldn't, how can you invite just women, and we also want to travel and so on. But it was a fantastic eye-opener for many of the women taking part, some who had just begun working in the radio, because there were actually not two women in the team of 15 radio producers, so they had to find somebody who would like to become a radio worker. And after some discussion, we spent most of the time discussing women's lives and women's conditions. And in one of the breaks, this old woman came up to me, and she looked at me and kind of kept shaking my sleeve, and she said, "Is it right?" And I said, "What is right?" And she said, "Is it right that women have the same rights as men?" And I say, "Yes, that's what is in the legal. We had just been discussing the legal framework and the family law and things like that." And she said, "So my husband is not allowed to beat me up? Here you have it again, the violence against women." And I said, "No, according to your legal system, he's not allowed to do that." And she was just crying. So, I mean, that's just one little story, but there were many of these really where women would just say, "Wow, is this really how we could do it?" And while we were thinking, well, we cannot take the responsibility for suddenly having a lot of divorces or unhappy women in unhappy lives. So we were working on how can we create a kind of coaching process around the radios to create a strong, healthy step-by-step development. And we did that, and in one of the small communities that I worked with up in the north of Mozambique, at the beginning there was one of the radios that sent two women, of which only one had been in the radio before. And I went up there to visit before I went back from Mozambique in 2004. And there were now 33 women active in the women's radio. They had created a cooperative, income generation. They had chicken and sheep. And they came dancing, you know, with this nice way you are greeted. And they told powerful stories of change, including, most importantly, and as the first one, a lot less violence. They had gotten a new standing, and this, in the end, it had very little to do with the radio. But the radio and the women's network in the radio, in order for all the reasons that I've talked about before, and all the reasons we know, then this movement had become a facilitating factor in them starting to shake up their lives, to work together, and to find a way out of the even much more complicated life situations that they were in before. So that was a very powerful change, and men were extremely happy. Suddenly one of them said, I never thought about that my wife, or the woman in my life, that she could be my partner. I look at her with completely new eyes. So this is, of course, just one little example, but I think it's indicative of the kind of changes that I was so fortunate to see take place during this period.
So, Birgitta, do you think that these kinds of changes that happened in communities in Africa because of community radio, do you think they have any application in developed societies?
Now, the way that, or the reason why I think that the radios I have been involved with, either on a longer term basis or just as an observer, an evaluator, an impact assessment person, the reason is that the radios are starting where people are, and a lot of the radios work on the basis of identification of dreams. Where do we want to go? Instead of focusing on what problems do we have and how can we solve them, to say what is our dream and how can we get there. And that is immensely motivating to see, if I want to be there, or I want my daughters and sons to be there, what do I need to do about my life? And then to start debate on this and attacking authorities that withhold information or don't give you the rights that you have, or violate your rights in different ways. If a similar approach was used, I think that radio could have a lot to give. It's not just a channel for information or a radio. It is also the community meeting place, and in some places the radios have a small library. They have, of course, the fax and now also the computer and the internet access and so on. But literacy courses were naturally taking place at the radio because this was a meeting place. I know that the World Food Programme in some areas started to distribute rations near the community radio. And then they organized that while the women were waiting, because you never knew when the truck would come, you could have literacy courses. And in that sense, very practically, yes, the community radio becomes the community center. But I also remember from my own old Red Stocking days that when we talked about our radio, it was like a second home. It was a place you came and you just discussed your life, and sometimes it was turned into a program. But it was a lot more than just a production collective. It was a collective of friends.
Birgitta Jallo from Denmark, founder of Communication Partners, interviewed at the 2010 conference of the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. I'm Frieda Werden. To hear this program again, email wings@wings.org. Special thanks to Suzette Cullen, CJSF-FM, and Genevieve Vaughan, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.